Yogacharya Stutra Sata Sri Srimad is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All the assembled devotees Ki Jai Shri Radha Deshtam Ki Jai Hare Krishna. Very nice to be with everyone again. Thank you very much. Rama Uchu Naranata Najanimas Twat Priyayad Vyavasyati Bhutale Nravastare Shayanam Pashya Shatruhan. Translation. All the women addressed the king, O master of the citizens, we do not know why your dear wife has taken on this sort of existence. O killer of enemies, kindly look, she is lying on the ground, without bedding. We cannot understand why she is acting this way. All the women addressed the king. Sorry. O master of the citizens, we do not know why your dear wife has taken on this sort of existence. O killer of enemies, kindly look, she's lying on the ground without bedding. We cannot understand why she is acting this way. Purport. When a person is devoid of devotional service or Vishnu bhakti, he takes to many sinful activities. King Puranjan left home, neglected his own wife, and engaged himself in killing animals. This is the position of all materialistic men. They do not care for a married, chaste wife. They take the wife only as an instrument for sense enjoyment, not as a means for devotional service. To have unrestricted sex life, the karmis work very hard. They have concluded that the best course is to have sex with any woman and simply pay the price for her, as though she were a mercantile commodity. Thus they engage their energy in working very hard for such material acquisitions. Such materialistic people have lost their good intelligence. They must search out their intelligence within the heart. A person who does not have a chaste wife accepted by religious principles always has a bewildered intelligence. The wife of King Puranjan was lying on the ground because she was neglected by her husband. Actually, the woman must always be protected by her husband. We always speak of the goddess of fortune as being placed on the chest of Narayan. In other words, the wife must remain embraced by her husband. Thus she becomes beloved and well protected. Just as one saves his money and places it under his own personal protection, one should similarly protect his wife by his own personal supervision. Just as intelligence is always within the heart, so a beloved chaste wife should always have her place on the chest of a good husband. This is the proper relationship between husband and wife. A wife is therefore called Ardhangani, or half of the body. One cannot remain with only one leg, one hand, or only one side of the body. He must have two sides. Similarly, according to nature's way, husband and wife should live together. In the lower species of life, among birds and animals, it is seen that by nature's arrangement the husband and wife live together. It is similarly ideal in human life for the husband and wife to live together. The home should be a place for devotional service, and the wife should be chaste and accepted by ritualistic ceremony. In this way, one can become happy at home. Sorry. Om Agyana Timidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam. Hare Krishna. So, my dear friends, my dear Vaishnavas, what is it that I can say as a married man about this purport? What have I got to say? There is a sannyasi in the room. How much can I glorify the Grihastha ashram with a sannyasi in the room? And yet, Every sannyasi knows if we don't have good grihasthas, who's he going to preach to? Whose homes will he visit? Whose cows will be milked while he gives Bhagavat Katha? If he holds his vesh for donations, who will give anything at all? Therefore, every sannyasi should know which side his bread is buttered on. If we want to run a Bhaktivedanta college, we need happy grihasthas. Happy grihasthas who have money, and happy grihasthas who want to give it to a sannyasi who is looking after a wonderful Bhaktivedanta college. Is it not? Okay. How can you prosper if no one has any money? If all the poor Brahmins are begging from all the poor Brahmins, what will happen in society? So for every one sannyasi, we need thousands and thousands of such happy grihasthas who are described in this verse. Now, it is ISKCON's business to create such happy grihasthas. This is our preaching mission. But how can you have a happy grihastha if he's too attached to his wife? This is the whole point of the story of Puranjan. So, he's not happy if he doesn't have a wife. He's not happy if he has too much of a wife. And so there must always be balance. I think this was how you accessed the internet here a couple of years ago. I said, what is your password for the internet here at Bhaktivedanta College? I won't tell you what the password is this year. They've just told me last night. But previously it was balance. So unfortunately in life, getting the balance right is sometimes very difficult. Sometimes difficult. But it is the expertise. It's the expertise of a preacher to get the balance right. It's the expertise of a householder to get the balance right. It's the expertise of a sannyasi to get the balance right. It's the expertise of a temple president to get the balance right. It's the expertise of a GBC to get the balance right. It's all about balance. You see. Now, someone said to me, well, balance, that doesn't mean as if you have anything at all. You're neither this, nor you're neither that. But it doesn't mean a refutation of both good principles, neither austere nor comfortable. It doesn't mean that you end up with nothing. Rather, you end up with balance. Balance is good. Balance doesn't mean a refutation of both principles. It means a harmony of them both, so you can actually get on and do things. So here, Narada Muni, he's using an extended analogy, and it's one of the longest analogies in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam has some analogies. Prabhupada says that in the Bhagavatam there are true stories and there are metaphorical stories. But the metaphorical stories, the preacher, such as Narada Muni, will always declare this is a metaphor. He will always declare. We won't be left thinking, is Krishna real or is Krishna a metaphor for some higher truth? We don't leave that in the Bhagavatam. So he gets to the end of the story and he says, actually, my dear king, this is an extended metaphor, the subject of which is you. And Narada Muni is the most expert preacher that we know. And he crops up right through the Bhagavatam. And he has many different preaching techniques because he's a balanced preacher. And the art of a preacher is to try to minimize a person's sinful engagement and to maximize the person's pious or devotional engagement. And this is how Narada Muni is doing it. And sometimes Narada Muni, as a preacher, he has to deliver bad news. You see. But even when he delivers bad news about Puranjan, how entangled the king has become, he does it in a nice way. There was a man who had a very old mother. Did I tell you this story before? Did I tell you this story? Did I tell you? Anyway, the man had a very old mother. She was 90 years old and she was quite sick, but he had to do some business in another town. So he said to the man next door, can you please look after my mother? She's very sick, she may pass away at any moment, but I really, really have to for my business. If my business collapses, I won't have the money to look after my mother, so I have to leave my mother. You know, looking after my mother is a very important thing in my life, but in order to look after her, I have to make some money. So I have to give up one principle to the other principle so that I can serve the higher principle. So he said, and if you could look after her for just 1 week, she's very sick, she needs to be fed and every day. Oh, and by the way, I also have a cat, and could you look after the cat for me while you're looking after my mother, seeing as you're coming here? So he was away for a week, and on the second day, the cat was unfortunately hit by a car, and the cat was killed. And on the fourth day, the mother passed away. So then he had a lot of bad news to give the man, and he thought, oh my God, he said, how am I going to do this? He said, I can only, this is just for people, and he said, I can only, I can't give this all at once. He said, this is too much. He said, let me start with the cat. So then he said, it's very nice. Did you make money as you were? He said, very nice, very nice. He said, so how's things been? How's it been for you, looking after my mother, looking after the cat? And he said, well, I have some bad news. Your cat has been killed on the road. Now, this man was very, very devoted to his cat, and immediately he was grieving. He said, oh, no, oh, my God, oh, my God. He said, yeah, she was hit by a car, and she was squashed. He said, oh! He said, why are you giving me such bad news like that? He said, you should, when there's bad news to tell, you should have given it very gently. He said, well, I had to tell you the truth. This is the truth. He said, yes, I know, but sometimes the truth has to be given in stages so that my heart can accommodate the truth. He said, well, what did you want me to say? Well, he said, you could have told me that on Tuesday the cat was on top of the roof and the cat was getting some sunshine. And then somehow or another it started to rain and the cat slipped and the cat fell off the roof and broke a leg. And then I took the cat to the hospital, but on Thursday, unfortunately, with tears of love in his eyes, the cat expired. He said, you could have told it to me like that. He said, when giving bad news, he said, give so very gradually. He said, so how's my mother? He said, well, on Tuesday she was on top of the roof having some sunshine. So he was trying his best, but he didn't get it right. So when giving bad news, we have to break the bad news gently. And for a man who is very attached to his kingdom and his wife and his money, it is very bad news when the preacher comes to his house and says, my dear king, all of this is Maya, all of this is pain and suffering, and you must take to the lotus feet of Krishna before it's too late. So the bigger the person is, the greater the level of expertise is required. So Prabhupada said, when preaching to a big man, you have to learn how to catch a fish, a big fish, without getting wet. And the bigger the fish is, the more the fish will splash as you're bringing the fish in. Okay. For those of you who are young, this action here denotes bringing in a fish. Hare Krishna. So the bigger the fish is, the more it splashes. So we do this in different ways. And Prabhupada said, sometimes you tell somebody something by telling another person who's standing close to the person, especially if you want to correct some behavior. And it's called the mother-in-law teaching the daughter-in-law. This preaching technique is called the mother-in-law teaching the daughter-in-law. The mother teaching the daughter so the daughter-in-law will hear. Because often the daughter-in-law comes into the house and the way she cooks is not quite pleasing to the husband, you see. But the mother, she knows how to cook for her son, but she can't tell her new daughter-in-law directly, because otherwise the daughter-in-law will not want to hear. I'm going to cook for my husband the way I want to cook for my husband. But the mother can speak to the daughter. So when the daughter and the daughter-in-law are cooking side by side, the mother says to the daughter, you know, you should never roll chapatis like that. You should never roll chapatis with ghee underneath. You should always roll chapatis with flour underneath. Otherwise, the chapati will stick to the surface and then it won't rise properly. So then the daughter-in-law is thinking, the daughter, my new sister, she didn't know that, but I didn't know it either, but now I do. And then the mother comes to the daughter-in-law and she says, so how are you doing, my dear new daughter? Very well, Ma. So she's telling. So another way is telling, for instance, telling a story. So I knew someone, I knew someone who, when they made chapatis, they had ghee underneath. Everybody knows that's not the way. Don't you, my dear daughter? You know that. Oh yeah, of course, I know that's the way to do it. You see. But sometimes you have to do that very carefully, because the person may begin to understand. And in this extended analogy, there's some telltale signs, because the name of the king is Puranjan, and the name of the king, excuse me, the king, King Puranjan, and it also begins with a key, P, King Prachinabharishat. You see, so it's a little bit of a telltale thing. So he's, Narada Muni is speaking to him. It's just like if Yadunanda Maharaj was to, you know, ask me into his room after class, and he was to say, Kripa Moya, I want to tell you a story. Yes, Maharaj. And this story is about someone I used to know in Spain called Kripa Sindhu. And he had been married for a very long time. And this Kripa Sindhu was so attached, and he had two daughters and one son. Immediately I'd begin thinking, I also have two daughters and one son. This person's name is Kripa Sindhu, my name is Kripa Moya. And I begin to think, Maharaj, where is this story going? You see. And so eventually this Kripa Sindhu, he passed away before he had taken sannyas. So what do you think of my story, Kripa Moya? So I would be thinking, Maharaj is actually very, very gently talking to me. Of course, he wouldn't tell me a story like that. But sometimes when a person begins to tell you a story, it is indirect, but it is quite direct at the same time. So you have to be clever to be a preacher. And here at Narada Muni, he's actually being quite clever. Otherwise, these techniques are well known outside the world of Krishna consciousness, you see. But sometimes it's easier to tell people something when they see it happening to other people. And therefore, drama is very important. Theater is very important. And what is theater except a story being told? Instead of making pictures with my hands and pictures with my words, I'm making pictures with characters. So all across Europe, there's a very important tradition of drama called morality play. Morality plays. And it takes moral principles from usually the Bible, and it puts them into stories, and people can see what happens if you're moral and what happens if you're immoral. So if you're bad, this will happen to you. So these morality stories, they would come, there would be a group of traveling players, and they would go from church to church, and sometimes outside the church or in the marketplace, they would play, and there would be music, because people like to hear music. And there would usually be laughter, because if you can get someone to laugh as you're telling them a story, or preferably before that you're telling a story, then people will listen more. And usually there's attractive costumes, because people like to look at colorful things and unusual things. And in this way, you get your story across. But the story is always, what happened to a man when he was bad? And what happened to a man who was good? And then people can understand these stories. So, for instance, we hear all through the Bhagavatam, we're hearing stories, not just of good people, although the Bhagavatam is meant for good people. It's meant to be a book which is spoken, a conversation which is spoken only for good people, people who are pure, in heart. You see, dharma projita kaita votra nirmat saranam satam. This book, right in the very beginning of the book, it says this book is for people who are pure in heart. But in the book itself, we have so many stories of people who just made a mistake. You know, we read about people who made mistakes, sometimes big demons who made mistakes. Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and sometimes small demons. So Ajamil, he was a nice boy, nice Brahmin boy, etc., 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 but he made a big mistake. And all through his life, he made a big mistake, and at the end of his life, he made good of his life. So this is told to you as a story, and it's a very dramatic story. And the interesting stories, and we read them, and we speak them again and again and again. And we like to put on plays of these stories, you see. Ajamil is a very dramatic story. He's lying there, and the Yamadutas come, and the Vishnudutas come, and there's a debate between them, and he doesn't know which way to. He's being taken, and the Yamadutas go, and they suddenly discover that there's someone greater than Yamaraj, that their lord and master, he serves that person. And by the chanting just of the name of that person, Narayan, their service to their master, which can be thwarted by no human being alive, no human being can thwart the service of Yamaraj, but only a person who chants the name of Yamaraj's master. Well, they didn't even know that Yamaraj had a master. So this is a wonderful story. And at the end of the story, we feel very... my japa just got a little bit easier because I understand now that it's so powerful, the japa that I chant. And so in this way, we hear these stories. Now, ordinary people hear the stories. For instance, they hear the story of Lord Ram. And within the story of Ram, there's so many spin-off stories. You know, someone starts telling you a Vedic story, and once upon a time there was a king. Why so many stories start with king? Because people like to hear about celebrities. They like to hear about the lives of famous people. Open any Belgian newspaper, and you don't get stories of ordinary people. Right? Here's an ordinary woman last night. Last night, let me tell you the news. Last night there was a woman in Ghent who gave birth. Is Ghent in Belgium? It is, isn't it? Last night there was a woman in Ghent who gave birth to a baby boy. So? That's happening all the time. She was an ordinary woman? Yes. The baby had two arms? Yes. Two legs? Yes. So? Why tell me the story? Now, if a baby in India has four hands and four legs, as little Lakshmi, you've seen the pictures? A little girl called Lakshmi, she was born with two hands? Three hands. Anyway, she was unusual. It made the news all over the world. Everyone is like, please tell me that story. A little girl in India that was born with four legs, tell me all about it. You see? It's just like my daughter is now working in a hospital delivering babies. And she had to tell me the story of the Siamese twins, two babies that were, you know, stuck together. Everybody was talking about it. So many ordinary babies. Oh, I have to talk about this one. Why? Because this one is unusual. This one's different. You see, we all want to hear about something different. And especially when the difference happens to famous people. You see, so many men get married. And so many men leave their wives. But when a famous footballer leaves his wife, then it's in the newspaper. And when he's the captain of the England team, then it is very important that you must read about this. You see? Now, when a king does something, then it's remarkable. You see? Then it's remarkable. Just like recently you had the terrible train accident outside Brussels. And in the English newspapers, two things were reported. There was a train accident, and so many people died, and even the King of Belgium came to the scene. This was reported in the English newspapers. You see? It was even the King came. So this is an important detail. This was such a disaster that even the King came. And so people want to know. So if a person is famous, let us know about this person. So through the Bhagavatam, not only do we get pious kings, but we also get bad kings like Vena. And we want to know, what did the kings do? Because ordinary people, they want to know what the famous people are doing. And if the famous people are Krishna conscious, they will also become Krishna conscious. You see? What's the verse? Yad yad acharati shreshtas. Yes. That whatever the famous people do, then others will do also. So we get so many stories of kings. So here's a Narada Muni speaking to a king, and we're getting to hear this story because of its importance to us. Now Narada Muni shows another technique, and he shows this technique in a couple of places. He tells the king the future. When he comes to Murghari, the hunter, doesn't he show him the future? He shows him the future. Huh? Is it Murghari the hunter where he shows him the future, or is he to tell him the future? He says, if you kill these animals, then you will be killed in Maharorava. You'll be picked to pieces. So is Murghari the hunter? Maharaji. You see? And King Prajana Bharashat, is he shown his future if he continues to kill animals? Yeah? I forget. He showed him in the sky, that's right, yeah. So either way, huh? All the animals were coming to pierce him after death, yes. So he was showing, I mean, just imagine if someone was to, some strange visitor to Radha Desh said, Prabhu, on this laptop I have a movie of your life. And come and I'll show you, okay? And he showed, and the movie began when you were born and featured you as you are today and then carried on the movie until the end of your life. That would be both, it would be fascinating. You'd want to watch that movie, but at the same time, maybe at a particular point, you'd go, no more. I don't want to see, no more. There's a famous English story written by Charles Dickens about one man, and in one night, Mr. Scrooge, he is shown his past, he's shown his present, and then he's shown his future. And as he is beginning to show the end of his future, he says to the spirit who is showing it to him, he says, no more. I don't want to see any more. Don't tell me. You see? It's like a person who's seen the movie before. You know, you don't go to the cinema, but if you've seen the movie before and you're sitting beside someone, and you say, who hasn't seen the movie, and you go, oh, this is a good bit. Shh, 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 shh. Don't tell me. You see. And then if he says, well, let me tell you, see, what happens at the end? He says, no, don't tell me the end. You'll spoil it for me. But unfortunately, this is the preacher. The preacher comes and says, so this is the story of your life. Let me tell you how it ends. Okay? No! Don't tell me. Because the end of the story in the material world is very unfortunate. The end of the story of your life is that you die. Probably frustrated. Probably never having achieved the goals that you thought that you wanted. Okay, and you're just slightly frustrated. Unfortunately, that happens again and again and again and again. And in each life you try to fulfill those goals, but often without Krishna. So coming to Krishna consciousness means that the last time round you had that deep realization that actually I cannot do anything without the grace of God. That's the only way I can do these things. And therefore, with Krishna, all things are possible. Without Krishna, things are unobtainable. They will always remain the mirage in the desert. You see? Happy wife, or happy husband, happy children, good money in the bank, nice car, complete satisfaction. These will always remain just out of reach. Just out of reach. Now, is it different with Krishna consciousness? You see, do you get a good wife and a good husband and a good bank balance and a nice car? You see? What you do get is you get the satisfaction, and which is what you were after, by chasing the good wife, the good husband, the good bank balance, the good car, the good house, the good job, social standing, and all these things. You're chasing them to get pleasure. Not just as described in this purport, not just sex pleasure or the pleasure of eating nice food, but the pleasure of having, perhaps contributed to your community. Let's talk about sattvic pleasure that a person tries to get in their life. That in my life, I did something good for other people. You see? But unfortunately, material life even denies you that. Sometimes you can work hard all your life and you can be rejected by the very community that you've worked for years and years and years. And you don't know why this is happening. You know why it's happening. You see? Now, sometimes people say, you don't need God to be good. You see? The secularists, the humanists, the humanist philosophy is that you can be a good person without God. But I say no. Well, I say no because this book says no. It says that you can try to do good to other people without God, but all your attempts to do good will often backfire. So even when you try to do good in the material world without God, the good can turn into bad. The ancient Greeks, they had a few golden rules, and they said sometimes, I said that not all the times, but sometimes when you try to, sometimes a virtue can actually become a vice when you carry it to the extreme. That's why balance is always important. You try to do something good, and you try and try and try, but so, fasting is a good thing. It's a virtue to fast. That's why we fast twice a month. But if you take that good thing and you do it too much, it becomes a vice. You see? And it punishes the body. And it may kill the body. You see? So, you can take any attempt to try to do good, but if that goodness does not come as a result of God-given intelligence through Shastra, and if it is not pleasing ultimately to Krishna, then that virtue can turn into a vice. It's like sometimes these days devotees say, it's good to speak the truth, Prabhu. Okay? It's good to speak the truth. And in ISKCON, they never give us the truth. Okay? We just get mashed potatoes. Our communication in ISKCON is just mashed potatoes. It's pre-chewed by the GBC. Then you get your information. The GBC takes a potato, chews it, makes mashed potato, and gives you the mashed potato. But I want the truth, and I will give the truth. And so he goes on his keyboard, and goes online, and writes off to different websites. This is the truth. So his idea of virtue actually causes vice, because it causes people to actually forget Krishna. In another part of the world, the person that he hasn't even intended to influence leaves Krishna consciousness. So virtue can become a vice. And even maybe good intent. I doubt their intent. So we have to be very careful. Everything is so delicate and so fine, Prabhupada said, you may miss it. He says, Krishna consciousness is so... What did he say? It is so... what was the word? Simple, yes, so simple. He said, Krishna consciousness is so simple, you might miss it. You see? You can just miss the point completely. You see? So it's not your intelligence, it's not your attempt to do good for others. You see? So, in this verse, what time do we finish? Finish now? What? As soon as you like, she said. Thank you, Kanchanavali. So in this verse, Prabhupada seems to be talking. We've started this new thing at our Namahata groups, our Sanghas. When we read some verses and purports of Srila Prabhupada, we often ask this question. Where is what Prabhupada says in this purport contradicted by what Prabhupada says in another purport? Which may seem, if I'm saying contradiction in Prabhupada's purports, it may seem very controversial. But better that you have that controversy out in the open than raging inside the mind of a person who's just trying to fathom out why a few purports ago, for instance, Prabhupada says something like, So Paranjan is very attached to his wife, and it is a very bad thing for a man to be attached to his wife. He should be transcendental, and at a certain point he should leave and go to the forest. Okay? And all the brahmacharis say, yes, got this sorted. Now we understand what Prabhupada really wants. Because, of course, this is the big debate always in ISKCON. There's what Prabhupada wanted, but what Prabhupada really wanted. Okay? So, Maharaj, you understand what Prabhupada wanted, but I understand what Prabhupada really wanted. You see? And by a process of what I call SPR, it's called SPR, remember this one, selective purport retention. I read the Bhagavatam, but I read it selectively. Okay? And I read the purports, and I read Prabhupada's purports that seem to suit me at a certain point. So that I can say, yes, Prabhu, but Prabhupada said, okay, and I've got the purport. So let's bring that out into the open. Prabhupada said many things. And sometimes in a few pages, he says different things. Okay? He says, having a wife is not such a good thing. Being attached to a wife is not such a good thing. Embracing the wife to the chest is a very bad thing. How is that possible? That's a position only for Lakshmi and Narayan. And any man who thinks that he can embrace his wife to his chest is simply trying to copy the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in this purport, we read that every woman, her real position should be on the chest of her husband. Prabhupada, I just don't... What do you want? At one time, of course, Prabhupada talked about... he was in New York, and he talked about... He said, so ekadasi means not fasting, but ekadasi means feasting. Feasting means only taking Krishna prasadam, as if it is only taking Krishna prasad, food that has been offered to Krishna. If you only take remnants of Krishna's meal, this is fasting. You see? And in this way, the tongue will be satisfied. The whole point of fasting is to control the tongue. So if you only eat prasadam, you are automatically controlling the tongue. So Prabhupada, everybody went, Jai Prabhupada! So, in this way, by feasting, we can go back to home, back to Godhead. Jai! So then Prabhupada flew to Los Angeles. Now, don't ask me, because it was all brahmacharis in New York and all slightly attached householders in Los Angeles, why Prabhupada, you know, maybe there was something to do there, but Prabhupada, in the very next verse, the next day, he said, so we have to control the tongue. At least twice in a month, fasting, no food. So there were some devotees who had been in the class the previous day. So any questions? Srila Prabhupada, you said yesterday. And Prabhupada said, I said yesterday, I said today. You listened to me yesterday, you listened to me today. You see? And therefore, you cannot understand what Prabhupada really wanted simply by reading purports. And the point is, you may choose your purports. And that is why everyone needs spiritual guidance. Okay, I'm not getting into a guru discussion here, but you need spiritual guidance of someone who understands more than you do. And when you found that person, or persons, and you go to them for guidance. I say, Prabhupada says this here, and he says that there. What do I do? So here, Prabhupada is talking about how householder life should be done. And please note, my dear friends, at the end of the purport, you young people here, Prabhupada says that the wife should be chaste and should be accepted by a ritualistic ceremony. You see? Sometimes in our history of ISKCON, we have neither. Well, we don't have faithful husbands either. And maybe that's got a big part of unchaste wives. But we have to understand that these ashrams are not changeable. And the point is, when you get married, that's it. That's it. It's married for life. Because in this, yes, I know. All the subtitles that are coming up, flooding. Yes, I know it happens. It happens, and it happens in England, and it happens everywhere. Okay. But there must be a point at which ISKCON takes the ideal and starts making it a practical reality, you see. And so gradually we say, Prabhuji, if you're divorced, you cannot serve as a temple president. You see, if you're divorced, you cannot serve in this way, or you cannot serve in that way. We start making it difficult for unfaithful husbands and unchaste wives. Otherwise, we will always have a culture where it remains a far-off ideal, like a mirage in a desert. But the difficult thing about a mirage in a desert is that you'll always be thirsty. You see? You'll never have faithful husbands or chaste wives unless somebody starts it off somewhere, in some yatra. Okay? Now, the best way to have a faithful husband and a chaste wife is to not make the mistakes in the first place. And the best way to do that is to have spiritual guides and to understand the science of husband and wife selection. It is a science. And elsewhere in Prabhupada's books, he talks about it being a science. Don't really want to get into that now, because it's not adequate, you know. But the point here is that if there is a way to do the sannyas ashram, and there is a way to do the grihastha ashram, and there's a way to do the brahmachari ashram, and we haven't quite figured out what the vanaprastha ashram is, but we're working on it. Okay, it's something to do with going to a forest, but because they, in England they cut down all the trees to make ships to fight the French and fight the Spanish and probably fight the Dutch as well. We were just fighting everybody from our ships. Okay, so we cut down all the forests and we never really replanted them. That's why, you know, we don't have a modern equivalent of Robin Hood, because there's no forest for him to live in. And it's like Vrindavan. You go to Vrindavan and you go to Talavan in Vrindavan, and, you know, I'm naive. When I was a younger man, 20-something years ago, I went on the Braj Mandala Parikrama. You go around all of Braj. So we came to Talavan, and I was expecting, in my naivety, I was expecting a forest of tal trees, date palms. You know how many trees there are left in Talavan, in Vrindavan? One date tree left. So if you really want to become immersed in the pastimes of Krishna and Denukasura, you're really going to have to use your imagination and maybe just look at the pictures in the book. Or just sit under that one tal tree, as I did, you know, and touch the tal tree as you're reading the story. And then maybe the only place left with trees is Kamyavan, through which Krishna used to go to Bhojanstali. Bhojanstali is where the boys used to sit sometimes and have their lunch packs and throw their lunch packs to each other and see what each other's mother had put in the lunch pack, you see. And where Vyomasura is near there, the flying demon. So unfortunately, how did I get onto that? So Vanaprastha, we're trying to figure out what that means. But there's no mixing of ashrams. There's no mixing of ashrams. And in other sampradayas, notably the Sri Sampradaya, they like to follow all the rituals of sannyas and all the rituals of grihastha ashram. I was learning the story of one man who's just become the next acharya. He's an acharya in waiting. What happens, just to avoid confusion, they have two acharyas. One is the junior, one is the senior. And then the junior will follow the senior around for a few years until the senior acharya expires. And then he's fully trained in how to be the acharya. Anyway, up until just a few months ago, he was a married man. And he he was a follower of the Vedas, and not only a Sri Vaishnava, but a follower of the Yajurveda, and every day he was performing fire sacrifices in his house. And then one day he got the call, and he came and he finished off in one fire yagya with his wife, because the fire yagya must always be performed with the wife at the side. So he came and he did this fire yagya, and it was a finishing off of all of his duties of Grihastha Ashram. He said goodbye to his wife at the fire yagya. She went home. He continued the fire yagya. Then he went, he studied for the night. All night long he studied the Shastra. And in the morning he shaved his head, took bath, and put on his sannyas vesh, and he was a sannyasi. With that level of and I read that and I thought, that is detachment. And his wife was perfectly happy after a long, long life of marriage. Cared for, but perfectly happy. And he was going on to, as they say in the Christian church, he was going on to glory. He was a happy householder, not a frustrated man, you see. But he was fully mature and going on to his sannyas life. So then, as the sannyasi before him had done. So, then one story I was told by, just to show how intensely they're following rules and regulations of sannyas life, because that's what it means to follow the not only the sometimes we kind of gloss over it, you know. In other words, if the varnas and the ashrams I heard you had a class here the other day about varnas, the ashrams, not so important. What's important is devotion to Krishna. Well, if devotion to Krishna is the most important thing, then it doesn't matter if a brahmachari acts like a brahmachari. Or as someone told me, there was a sannyasi giving a class somewhere in America, and he was saying, what you have to understand is that Krishna consciousness has nothing to do with varnashram dharma. And of course, he's sitting there dressed as a sannyasi. Sannyasi is essentially part of varnashram dharma. That's the whole point. It being a devotee of Krishna, that part of being a sannyasi is not part of varnashram dharma. That is transcendent to it. But dressing in saffron and having the, you know, and begging and having all these things, that's part of it. So the very principles that you follow, okay, we have principles of sadhana bhakti, and then we have regulative principles, okay, which we often, we use this term regulative principles to mean the things that you don't do. But actually regulative principles is everything that you do that regulates your life. Okay, so coming to Mangalati is a regulative principle. So if you don't come to Mangalati, you've broken the regulative principles. Okay, but that's not how ISKCON uses the language. But there are also regulative principles of sannyas life. And someone was telling me just recently, there was a real scandal in Sri Rangam. Did I say this last time? There's a real scandal in Sri Rangam because one of the very few sannyasis to have left Sri Rangam to go and preach in the West, who came just recently to Bhaktivedanta Mana, Chinnadira Swami. Anyway, there was a big scandal in Sri Rangam because he'd broken the codes of sannyas life. Now, if you say that to an ISKCON person, it means, you know, sannyasi suddenly discovered that he didn't want to be a sannyasi anymore. I said, really? I said, yes. He said, for 1,000 years, no sannyasi has fallen down in the Sri Vaishnava tradition. I said, what happened? He took a bath using water from a bucket. And I said, really? I said, really? I had to show surprise. I said, really? Scandalous, isn't it, what sannyasis get up to? Yes, he was in America, and he took bath from water in a bucket. And everybody's talking about it back in Sri Rangam. One time a sannyasi from the Madhva Sampradaya came to Bhaktivedanta Manor, and it was freezing cold, and he came at a very cold time, but he had to take bath in our lake. He couldn't take bath out of a bucket. He had to go to the lake. And it was absolutely, it was must have been, you know, just like 2 degrees or something like that, or even no degrees at all. It was very, very cold for him, and he was an old man, but he couldn't break that principle. So that's how rigid sannyasis have to be. Now, what has happened often in the world of ISKCON is that we have sannyasis leading the movement, and most of us were brahmacharis at some time. So sometimes the regulative principles of grihastha life don't quite make it into the culture. So the fact that men should actually be nice to their wives sometimes doesn't quite make it into the regulative principles of grihastha dharma. It's not written down anywhere. Then you don't get presented with, you know, there's a code of life for, there's a sannyas ministry. There's a brahmachari code book for how to be there's a brahmachari book, how to be a brahmachari, written by Bhakti Vikash Swami. There's a code of conduct written by Prahlad Nanda Maharaj about how sannyasis governed by the sannyas ministry should act. Does anybody know anywhere a book about how to be a good householder? Few tips. So there's a few tips in one temple after 44 years of ISKCON history. I'm just going to highlight the point here that sometimes we don't think that there are any regulative principles governing men and women in Grihastha Ashram apart from the word don't. Okay? That's the one regulative principle. Don't. Unfortunately, this is a particular purport where Prabhupada says, this is how, you know, the husband shouldn't go off hunting, he shouldn't go. And there are many, many principles written in the Dharma Shastras, which are also written by Yajnavalkya, who was an okay person. You know, we can actually, you know, take advice from these persons, how men and women should. But it is all... the most important point is being taught to us in Prabhupada's purports. The most important point is that right the way through whatever ashram you're in, the principle is vigyan, vairagya, and bhakti. These things are there. But this is a temporary situation I'm in. While I'm in this temporary situation, I should do it properly. I shouldn't lament either for the brahmachari that I once was. I shouldn't hanker for the sannyasi that I could become, you see. Maybe privately I can do that, but I should get on and do it. Otherwise you may miss the point. You may miss the point of the whole ashram by not actually doing what it is you're supposed to do in the ashram. And if you do take to that ashram, make sure you're going to follow the principles of that ashram. Or don't do it. Don't do it. Why do it? You see? Why become a brahmachari if you're not really going to be a brahmachari? If you're going to let the team down. Okay? Saffron is a very important shirt to wear. See? Like the Dutch team. If you want to play for Holland, you get the saffron shirt. Okay? But why do it if you're not going to play football? Okay? Now, you might say some of them don't follow that principle. But the point is that whatever ashram we're in, whatever service we're doing, let's do it the best way that we possibly can. And then we get the full benefit. And the best way that we possibly can is to follow everything from Shastra, because Shastra is written for someone in your situation, but also in your situation of being a devotee. There's other things which can, so you know, a Vaishnav householder may not do Shraddha. Okay, it may not worship the Pitris. Okay, may not do a few of the things that we do. May not have to wait for 13 days after someone dies in the family. Maybe only 3 days in the family. May the rites of purification that we do on a daily basis exceed the rites of purification that an ordinary person would do when a death has occurred in the family. There's things like that, you see. But and so we take that into consideration. But it does not mean that one who has entered the path of devotional service can completely reject everything, because that leads to disruption in society. When society is very small and very young, perhaps that's possible, you see, in the beginnings of ISKCON. The bigger ISKCON gets, the more it needs to be a exemplar of how this way of life can actually cause a revolution. So let us have a revolutionary life and give that revolutionary life to others. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. And now we can all go. Hare Krishna.